Blog Talk Radio.
In the beginning was the beat, and the beat was the rhythm of God, and the rhythm of God is the harmony of humanity, and where there is harmony, there is peace.
Greetings, family. Brother Thurman, can you hear me?
Good evening.
Greetings, how's it going?
I'm going, doing just fine.
Good. It seems like we're having some technical problems.
Yeah, I think so. I haven't heard Brother Thurman yet.
Okay. My name is Hakima. Who am I speaking with?
My name is Brother Renard. I'm the guest this evening.
Beautiful. I'm glad you're on. And hopefully Thurman will be in place in a moment.
I suspect he will.
Good. Who else is on the studio side? I see a few other mics open.
I'm not sure of that. I'm doing this on my phone.
Okay. Brother Kambiza, are you there? All right. Well, let's continue. Of course, this is our regular scheduled Thursday evening Dare to Win broadcast sponsored by Us Lift and Us Economic Development Cooperative. And we're here every Thursday evening at 9 o'clock Eastern Time, and sometimes we're here in spite of technical problems, and luckily we're able to broadcast, and you're here. Brother, give us your name and give us a little bit about your background and the subject matter that you're going to be focused on this evening.
Okay, I'll be happy to do that. My name is Renard Turner, also known as Brother Azebo. I'm the owner of Vanguard Ranch Limited in Gordonsville, Virginia. We are a sustainable and organic farm. I often present and speak on the need to return to an agrarian lifestyle as a vocational choice for people of African descent. And I'm here to speak on farming as a act of liberation.
Wow.
Yes, brother. Family, can you all hear me now?
Yeah, brother.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
good,
we can.
Good. You know, if we didn't have brother. Technical problems, you know, we wouldn't know what to do with ourselves, right?
Yes, brother. Yes, family.
All right, then. All right, then. Take it over, Brother Thurman.
Yes, brother. Thank you, Brother Baba Hakima. Brother Renard, what's your last four numbers on your phone?
9706.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure that I got the right connection here. So sorry for whatever the technical issue was, but family, moving forward, thank you so much, Brother Renard, for being on the call. And tonight's conversation is centered around the question of how can farming as liberation help us provide for the people and become more independent? And so I'm Brother Thurman, Us Lifting Us member, and our guest tonight is Brother Renard, and he's got a lot to share with us, more than we could get through in an hour. And so, Brother Renard, just tell the family, how you feeling tonight?
I'm feeling great. I'm very happy to be here and to be able to share some ideas and concepts and hopefully answer questions for people. But anytime I have an opportunity to share my vision, I'm happy to do that.
Wonderful. Okay, well, let's move forward with the topic tonight. And so the subject of farming is huge. And as we delve into the subject, please start us off with the concept of farming as liberation and tell us what does that mean. Go right ahead.
Okay. You know, whenever you ask people about the basic necessities of life, the first thing that comes up is food. Generally, people will answer the question of what are the most important necessities. First is food, second is shelter, and third is clothing. Food is always in the first position. As a people, we have been on this continent for at least 400 years, depending on who you choose to listen to. The fact of the matter is we continue to be in a worse condition than we were in our grandparents' time, because most of our grandparents had a garden and raised some produce or raised some animals on their farm and were able to feed themselves. Most of our brothers and sisters are captives. largely on the east and western coast of this country and are unable to feed themselves. So we are basically a captive population in an unfriendly environment without the ability to feed ourselves. And I think that that's pitifully unsustainable. And it should be at the top of our list when we're talking about liberating ourselves or any kind of nation building. And we don't speak on food as the base, we're missing the point. No one operates well on an empty stomach, and no one bites the hand that feeds them. Unfortunately, we cannot feed ourselves in America. That's not going to change unless we have a paradigm shift from what I call urbanosis. You know, we want to live in these urban communities, and to me that is part and parcel of our demise. I think we need a paradigm shift, that we need to return to agrarian living. We need to create intentional communities. We need to be able to grow food on a large enough scale and transport it to warehouses, cafes, restaurants, and so forth, and actually feed our own selves. I think the time is fast approaching where many of us are going to get missed meal cramps, and that's a bad situation to be in. Now, farming as an act of liberation is the way to change this, because at the root of it all is dependency. So I farm in order to be more independent, and that's where the freedom comes in. When I wake up in the morning, I'm at work. I can grow food. I can feed myself. I can feed the family. I can sell the surplus. I advocate buying rural parcels of land, building homes that are energy efficient, creating sustainable permaculture landscapes where you have year-round food. Regardless of what you choose to do as your so-called profession, I think that the best profession is farming, and that we need to really consider the effect that it can have on our people at large if we were to return to buying land en masse. I say buy land, not Lexus. The Lexus is not going to appreciate, but the land will. The Lexus is not something that is going to put wealth in your family. The land will. Being able to feed yourself allows you to get off of the whole welfare, poverty, chain, and cycle. We need to understand that our ancestors could do that. All indigenous people know how to feed themselves. And when someone takes that away from you, it forever makes you their slave. Farming can liberate you because you wake up, you're in control, you grow your own food, learn to build your own houses. Off-grid living needs to be the norm, not something that's exotic. And we need to stop depending on everyone else who doesn't look like us to provide us with all of the goods and services that we need. I farm as a serious act of liberation because it is my quest to be totally free, totally energy and food independent, and financially solvent. I wish to teach others who look like me, who have a desire to learn how to do these things, how to do that. That's why I farm, so I don't have to continue to be a slave to someone else. And it's very important to remember this. No one bites the hand that feeds them, and none of us want to miss meal cramp. Just about everybody I know wants to eat every day, and unfortunately, we're jumping through hoops to be able to get enough money to pay for food that someone else grew for us. Much of it is no good for us in the first place. Farming is a serious act of liberation. Our ancestors knew that. I think we really need to question this whole Western concept that's based on capitalism and begin to think about 21st century homesteading as a very defined act of liberation and revolution.
Good word, good word. And so you said just a minute ago, a lot of the food is no good. Tell us some more about that. And what type of food are you growing? And is it organic? Tell us about that.
We are actually what I call beyond organic. Unfortunately, that label has taken some hits lately. I am a proponent of organic farming, so yes, our farm is based on organic principles and practices. We're using no artificial petroleum-based fertilizers or chemicals or fungicides or pesticides or any of those types of things on our farm, and haven't since we started. That is the way to go. We also only use organically sourced seed sources from local seed company that we purchase from, and we don't plant genetically modified seeds on our farm either. So we're very clean in how we treat the land with respect. I think that's part and parcel of what we need to remember. We're only here for a moment, but we're supposed to leave it better than we found it. Unfortunately, most African Americans really don't know much about farming per se. And but to answer your question, brother, yes, we are an organic and sustainable farm. Everything that we grow here is clean and pure. We select our seeds very carefully. We select the varieties that we grow based on their nutritional value, content, and as well as taste. We also select for insect resistance and resistance to natural blights and funguses. All of these things are possible. So, and we use all of those practices on our farm. Most of the foods, over 60 to 70% of all the food that you get in your regular supermarkets is genetically modified organisms. And that's not something that we should be eating. And we need to question why it's there. You know, these foods are heavily laden with preservatives. The preservatives are there to preserve the profits for the middleman. And it's not good for our human bodies. I think most of us are beginning to understand that, but we still have a long way to go, as evidenced by the fact that, you know, there were many of our people were fighting in lines to get a Popeye's chicken sandwich not too long ago. If they understood the truth behind how that chicken was raised, you know, I highly recommend that everybody looks at a movie called Food Incorporated. There are several other very good movies that are out about food and how it's been contaminated. Right now, we've got the mega corporations that are trying to take over the food supply across the entire world, control the seeds, patent them, actually control the food you can get. It's not good. Many of the diseases we have as a people are directly related to the foods that we're eating. Unfortunately, there's a lot of misinformation out there, but we really, really need to dig into this and understand that at the root of it is what goes in your mouth affects your entire body, affects your thought process, which affects your actions. So it's all interconnected. Everything we do affects everything else that's happening on this planet in some way, shape, or form. Food has been weaponized. It's very political in this country. They use this term food deserts. I don't like that term. I prefer to call it what it is. I think it's more food apartheid. It's intentional. Yeah, see, calling it a food desert kind of links it to some like it's a natural phenomenon. You know, deserts occur in certain parts of this planet based on natural phenomena. This is not a natural phenomenon. This is food apartheid. There's nothing natural about it. It's back to redlining, you know, and all that redistricting. And it's all about real estate values. It's all about gentrification efforts. It's all tied up in the systemic racism that we know is a part of the American history. We have few choices, but what bothers me a lot is somehow we seem to have this ability to tolerate it more than we should. I mean, it's quite clear to me. I used to live in Washington, D.C. on Capitol Hill, so it's not like, you know, my wife and I were not rural-born. We were city-born and world travelers, and we chose to leave the city intentionally to live a cleaner life, a more spiritual life, and a freer life. But it seems like most of our folks are inclined to stay in these – my acronym for city is concentrated in tiny yards, C-I-T-Y. Most of us are concentrated in tiny yards or tiny spaces, you know, some kind of compartments, apartments, cells. I think all of this is just part of the programming to get people used to being confined in small places so that maybe when you get locked up, it's not such a strange feeling because you're only used to being jammed up in small space. Space is liberating. Farms give you that. Space to expand your thoughts, space to expand your horizons. Space to have a vision beyond the four walls is also liberating. So all of this is interconnected. So, you know, farming as an act of liberation embraces all of these things. And I know for the last 40 years I've lived in the country intentionally, and it's made a tremendous difference in how I see the world. I certainly feel much freer. And sometimes it's stressful because there's things that, well, we all have stress in this modern times, but it's a different type of stress. This is not the stress of having someone's, you know, boot on my back, you know, every waking moment of my day, so to speak, because I am in charge of all of my own time. That is very powerful. But to go back to the food part, I really wish that we would understand this on a different level. And it's not about running to the health food store and buying the latest herbs or a bottle of this or a bottle of vitamins to cure something. It's about really understanding the food supply chain, how it starts, where it came from, how it got to the warehouse, what's been put on it in the process, who's really making the money. Many of us just went through the holiday called Thanksgiving, but few people know that the turkey farmers only made about 66 cents per bird that they raise. That's 66 cents, less than a dollar. So to understand agriculture and understand the real food supply and distribution is to understand how this money works and how it flows. We are net consumers and not net producers, and that's what we need to change. You know, I would wish that we would start buying up 5-10,000 acres of land, you know, every month, some kind of way. Because if we did that, the power would be, I mean, really, if we wanted to liberate ourselves instead of talking about it, all we really have to do is buy thousands of acres of land, move to that, and put up an infrastructure to do what you need to do. But, you know, too many of us choose to talk about it instead of actually do it. But that's because we're comfortable being, you know, basically what I call modern slaves, and comfortable slaves never riot. You know, we're so tuned into this capitalist system and of commercial and consumerism that thinking outside of the box escapes most of us. But what if you were to wake up in the morning and be surrounded by space and didn't have to go anywhere because everything that you needed, you produced, either yourself or with the help of other people who look like you, who intentionally wanted to have this community that was self-sufficient. And you put up solar panels and you learned to live off the grid. Now, let me clear this up, because a lot of people have this misconception that living off the grid means that you don't have flushing toilets, you don't have hot water, you know, you can't watch TV. That's not it at all. There is appropriate technology that is available today that allows you to do all of those things, albeit you may have to adjust your usage, but it's all possible. And the prices have come down, and we're kind of missing the boat. You know, I know there's lots of brothers out there who are paying $500-$600 a month for car notes and, you know, wearing $200 shoes and so forth and so on. None of that's going to liberate them. That money could go towards things that really made a huge difference. You know, one person asked me, well, how did you buy land? And I said, it's very simple. You look at whatever you're paying for rent or mortgage. You know, mortgage is the French word for the march of death. And that's what it is, because you sign your life away for 30, 40 years, whatever. But that's typically what most people do. But you just look at the money you're already spending and learn to redistribute it. And that's how you make the changes. Whatever money you're making, you can shift it to liberate yourself. That might mean not driving a Mercedes and driving a Hyundai, as an example. But the truth is, both of them will go 0 to 60 and get you to the same place at the same time, given that there's speed limits anyway. A lot of it is just misplaced ego that makes us make choices that aren't very liberating for us. So I say all that to say that what we're really advocating is a paradigm shift from urban areas to rural areas. And let me just mention this also, because, you know, I've been involved in farming. We're featured in a lot of books. I do a lot of speaking and presenting on agriculture in different places around the states, the United States. We are now in the midst of an urban farming or urban ag movement. And I take offense at that, not because I think it's a bad thing, because I think it's a limiting factor. And I think we need to stop lying to the children and telling them that urban gardening is farming, because it's not. It is not farming. They are not going to inherit that plot behind the church. They're not going to inherit that plot behind the school. And they're not going to raise enough money in those gardens to fill up a warehouse or a supermarket, or to fill restaurants and cafes and employ people in the culinary arts or what have you, which is what we need to do if we're really talking about businesses that we own. So I'm saying, instead of a slice of the pie, we need to be telling these children we need to have vocational agricultural classes in their schools. And that's not presented as an option in most African-American communities, because truth be told, white folks don't want you to own land, because they know that through land ownership you can gain power and you can also gain liberation. We talk about food sovereignty, but to me that's really a joke, because we're not anywhere nearly close to having food sovereignty. And I'm not even sure that most of our people would really embrace it, because so much brainwashing has already been done. But that's another subject.
Brother Renard, when you talked about vocational agricultural classes, mm-hmm. with your vast
yes.
experience, that's something that you could teach?
I went to some in my high school years. It's something that I definitely could teach, and I know all the people who could teach it as well. I'm talking about
yes.
things like agricultural sciences and engineering, you know, different things about different types of livestock and grains and farm implements and welding and using cutting torches and, you know, how to lay bricks or how to pull wires or how to do carpentry. We need all of those skills. You know, somehow
yes.
we're missing the boat when we're not getting our young men into these vocational skills, that we cannot build a nation without skilled craftsmen. And at the top
okay.
of that list, for all of the craftsmen, you need skilled farmers, because everybody needs to eat. We need to deify and hold up our farmers more so than we hold up these entertainers and athletes.
Okay.
That's the problem that we have. We're going after the fluff and not the substance.
Yes.
Everybody eats.
Hold. Yes.
Go ahead.
Just family, this is some powerful information here. And Brother Renard said at the top of the list, he's said it in many ways, that food. And there's some major problems with the food that's in the stores and even in some health food stores. And he's talking
right.
about liberation. And so, family, if ideally, as usual, you should be taking notes and heeding this call. And you can reach us at 929-477-2789, 929-477-2789, and press the number 1 on your phone. You got questions or comments. And we're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back. All right, family, we want to continue on with the conversation. And Brother Renard, let's continue. And you were talking about the needs and what we can do, having family land and being in charge and going outside and going to work instead of having to leave and commute down the highway. And you talked about, you know, instead of buying tennis shoes and high-dollar cars, to buy some land and grow you some food. I would think that there's, and I think you can touch on, what is the problem with the people? Is it because they've been socialized and made to be so programmed to be inside that they have lost contact with nature, and therefore they're not anxious to be a part of nature in order to be more liberated?
I think the answer to that, Brother Thurman, is that we've lost our natural minds collectively.
Okay.
It's a systemic approach, and after well, let's just say five generations of systemic racism, we have been forced into this dependent mentality. That's the problem. We don't even see the ability to be free. Because we just, all we really want to do is make enough money to buy the things we need. So we really want to be the best comfortable slave we can be, which is totally different than being a free man that's liberated. So let me make an analogy here. Just in any city you go to, you're going to see Asian grocery stores filled with Asian foods and spices that were delivered to that store in trucks that were driven by Asian men and women with produce that was grown on Asian farms by Asian people. You can go to Mexican restaurants, Mexican stores. You can go to Middle Eastern stores. You can go to, and some places you have some West African and Caribbean stores. They're mostly bringing in dried and imported goods because they're not being grown in sufficient numbers here to really satisfy that clientele base either. Every ethnicity, every group of people seems to be able to do this because they relate back to the land and they grow what they need. You see, our disconnect is huge. We've even learned to eat like the Europeans. That's what we do. They've taught us everything, and we've bought into it, but not so much with other people in their culture. So there's many levels and many different ways to look at this, but there's, you know, many levels of what's the right word I'm fishing for here? Of distress. And that's what it is. There's so many different levels of distress that's involved in this process. If, in fact, we were to tell our youth, you know, right now the story goes pretty much like this. We want everybody to go to school. We want the youth to get a good education. We'd like them to get some skills in the business world, maybe computers or IT, something like that. Learn banking, learn how to do some monetary stuff, learn how to trade in a system that's not really ours. None of that is going to feed them. They cannot eat bitcoins. I don't care how many onions and cloves of garlic or whatever you put in there, it's not going to make a good soup. There will come a time when food becomes short. It's already short in our communities, real food. What will our people eat and who will feed us? That's what we need to be asking ourselves. What will we eat and who will feed us? We don't control the water into our communities. We don't control the food that's coming in. We don't control the energy. We don't control diddly. That is a problem. A homeless man, a landless man, is a homeless man. That's the real reality. We really have to begin to think about this. Are we really seeking liberation? Every week, so many black folks talk about building a nation. You cannot have a nation without farms. You cannot have a nation without farms. It's a ridiculous concept. Who's going to feed you? Where are your trucks? Where are your warehouses? Where are your stores in our communities where you can have the foods that our people want to eat? Where are they? And why don't we have them after 400 years? Because we devalue farming. I call it the anti-agricultural backlash. Somehow, many of our people equate farming to slavery. It is the exact opposite when you're the landowner and you're the boss. Nobody whips me to do anything. I get up when I get up. I do what has to be done. It is not always grueling. It is not always hard. And sometimes it is the most beautifully relaxing things that I've ever done. Yes, we could all live differently, but we have to change this urban concept. Right now, we are urbanized, and that's the disease that's killing us. And we keep on wanting to fight this environment, but it's like this. To me, if you're going to raise your children in a zoo, you got to expect animals. It's a bad situation, no matter how we want to fight it. What we need to change is the environment, external and internal. Somehow, we need to return to the land.
Okay. And, brother, when you're talking about we've lost our natural minds, and yet at the top of the list, you said number one is food, because without food, you know, we just do. And you're growing, clean food, you know, not genetically modified organisms.
That's good.
So if 100 people listening on the call, farmers like yourself, is there a process where they could participate in a buy-in to your seasonal production of food that would help them to have some good food?
Over the years, we've attempted a few of CSAs, consumer-supported agricultural concepts. CSAs,
okay.
consumer-supported agriculture. That concept is not new, and we have tried it before. You know, we're in our – well, I'm 67 now, so I'm not trying to push myself as hard as I used to. The bottom line is we never got enough cooperation from the African American community to support us in the way that we needed to be supported, to be as to be as economically successful as we want it to be. Although, you know, I will tell you this, that my wife and I, when we started the farm, we went into debt, you know, really $500,000 to do what we're doing. And we were sadly disappointed that we did not get much of any cooperation from the community that we thought would serve us. But then the reality really is that we're so disconnected that we don't really understand it. We're happy to run to, you know, the local food store and buy something of this and do this and take a little and think that we're eating well and doing, but we're not getting this big picture about food. We are very food insecure as a people. We are extremely food insecure. I don't know why we don't get it. But you show me the African-American community that's got a thriving, fresh produce food store with juice bars and healthy eating, and no, we don't. We have one here, one there, maybe, you know, and they all are struggling. But you don't have any big spaces because we're not doing it like that, and we need to be doing it like that. But, you know, we would serve here. We could do 25 families very easily from our farm. We never got up to that number, to be perfectly honest. And it's really ridiculous because, you see, to be a farm, a farmer assumes much financial risk. People don't get it because they don't know what land ownership really requires. And it's really sad, but, you know, what it takes for us to do this well is, of course, a community that's supportive. Nonetheless, we continue to walk the walk, talk the talk, and do the work. So, you know, we could comfortably feed 20, 25 families with what we grow here, and we'd be happy to do that. But we prefer to know the people, and they also need to be local enough to be able to come to get it, because the economy of scale and the cost of transporting up and down the road and picking it and doing the work and doing the seeds, the tractor, the tiller, the drip irrigation, the water, the electricity, you know, the different filters, your fuel to run up and down the road, your time, your labor. You can't do that and sell something for a dollar a pound. Nobody else does it. But oftentimes, that's what some of our people are looking for.
I got it. When you talked about the CSA, that's something if the people came forward. So just briefly, we got a caller we want to let on the line. But before we get to the caller, with the CSA, if there was 25 or more people, what's the simple process? What would they do? Put money up at the beginning or before the beginning of the growing season? Just tell us how that would work.
Right. Yeah, typically how CSAs work is that people pay for a share, and then they would get a food for, say, 4 months period, which would be 16 weeks, and that would entitle them to X amount of pounds of produce that would be, you know, predetermined based on what could be grown locally and during that season. But typically people pay up front. There's lots of these models around. You can see lots of them on the internet. But I will tell you that, well, yes, that's how it works. Could it be done? It's done all around us, but not by people who look like us. The difference is the trust factor.
I get that. And so I would think that if you did not collect up front for the shares, that a lot of people would say that I want to be in, and then they never had brought forth the money.
Yes, or they'd never, precisely.
Yeah.
We used to drive to D.C., which is like an hour and a half, 2 hours, to deliver produce,
yes,
and only four or five people would show up. That, you
okay.
know, that doesn't work well. So, you know, we,
yes,
you know, we would love to do it, but what we would rather do is have like a Vanguard Ranch Buyers Club, and it would be like extended family. And those, you know,
yes,
25 families or so would have a secure place to get food, secure place to come,
yes,
and that would help everyone out. But
okay,
but that model needs to be large enough to reach a lot of people.
I got that. So let us pause for a minute.
Okay.
We've got a caller that has got a question or comment. The last four numbers are 1249. 1249. Please give us your name and tell us where you're calling from.
Yes, greetings. My name is Eric, and I'm calling from West Georgia.
Hello,
thank
Eric.
You.
Hey. Yes. Greetings, brother. Sounds is that brother Thurman that I hear?
Yes, brother.
Okay, yes. I'm one of those Ulu members that's kind of been, you know, kind of been on the sidelines. But of course, I saw your guest tonight, and I was just listening to him. I wasn't going to chime in, but Brother Renard, when you started talking about the challenges of farming, it kind of resonated with me, and I certainly feel what you've been dealing with. It almost sounds like you was talking about me, especially when you started talking about the expenditures, about how much money you've had to spend, and Lord
yep.
knows, yeah, people just don't understand. It takes money to farm, and of course,
that's right.
And it does. And the CSA model, I do a CSA on my small farm, and of course, and I've been able to get up to about 20 customers, and of course, and after last year was just too complicated with all of the running around and doing this, and plus, you know, plus I've got animals too, so I just decided
mm-hmm.
not to do it after the 2018 season, and of course, and you're on the phone with, I mean, you're on a Ulu platform, and of course, and as a farmer, I'm part of a farmers cooperative. I'm a part of a group called West Georgia Farmers Cooperative. We've been around since 1966. and if it wasn't for the cooperative model, it would, I don't think many of our farms would have made it, especially over these last five decades. And so
I agree.
And I was just curious because co-ops are, and of course, and I go around all over the country doing presentations about, no, not only my co-op, but just co-ops in general. It's, you know, within the local food community, and of course, and they are a tool of prosperity and resilience if done right. And so, and I was just curious. Obviously, you're an experienced grower, and I've seen you in action on just looking here on Facebook, and I see what you're
mm-hmm.
doing, and just listening to you. Of course, I know that you're an old farm boy. And
mm-hmm.
and I was just curious as to if you have any other colleagues, friends, partners, other people in your area, other particularly black growers that are doing likewise, and if you all ever considered forming a co-op so you all can be able to aggregate and maybe do a little
yeah.
bit more, you know, of course. You know, you go fast, go alone, go far, go together.
Well, you know, the answer to your question is yes and no. Yes, there are a few other black farmers around. There is no real cooperative. I've done some work through Virginia State University and their Cooperative Extension Service. But we do not have a unified front. So we have no farmers who are growing in quantities large enough to aggregate and hit these markets like we would need to do to make the economy of scale workable and doable. So that's the downside. That's something that needs to be very much worked on. In this area, we've had a meeting and about 35 farmers showed up, but we only had one meeting and it's been like 4 years.
Yeah.
And the ball's been dropped. It's hard to get the farmers on the same page because by nature farmers are independent sorts anyway, as you know.
Yes, exactly.
And the other thing is, you know, we need customers, and, you know, I'm about an hour away from any major demographic area where there's enough population to really you know, for me to target, and especially where people who look like us, that's a factor also. So
okay. Yes.
There's work that needs to be done. I think the advantage that we have and that you have in Georgia and the traditionally, you know, the Southern agricultural belt is that black folks there always knew where they stood in relationship to the economy around them. They have more of a history of sticking together and working together. And they also have a more of a history of owning land. And I love it when I go down there and meet some of those farmers. And, you know, my heart of hearts tells me those are the farmers that we need to be highlighting and talking about, and not these urban gardeners who are getting subsidized by foundations and teaching the children how to grow, you know, 20 squash and 40 heads of lettuce and calling themselves farmers.
Amen.
Because there is a lot of generational black family farms, man, who are doing this thing and have been doing it for a few generations, and it's hard. And they don't get any notoriety. They get no respect. And
exactly.
And our city cousins don't even know we exist.
Right. And,
you know,
and
I
another
mean,
thing.
I've grown good organic food, and members of my own family would drive by the farm and go to Food Lion. That's how bad it is.
Right. Yes. And
you
of
know
course,
what I'm talking about. I'm not lying. It's the truth.
Yes.
Yes.
And of course,
Brother,
I commend you for. Go ahead, Thurman.
Yeah, go ahead and make your last statement.
Okay.
Brother.
Yes, I was just going to say, I commend you for, you know, at 67, you know, you're hanging in there, and you're definitely looking well for 67. That work does keep you young, but it's stressful at the same time. And you do know, of course, the average age of a black farmer, you know, you're just a couple years older than the average age of a black farmer. We're at 65 now, where the mainstream, where their age is like 58. So that's a challenge in and of itself. So
yep.
Just continue doing what you're doing. It's hard. And, of course, when you're talking about the farmers down south and that attitude of working together, that's quickly becoming they used to because we deal with it every day. And, of course, and so, yeah, so we know the challenges there. I know all the challenges you mentioned, folks dropping the ball, not meeting. But, of course, you know, we try to do our part by maintaining that consistency. And so just keep up the work, brother, and I appreciate you.
I appreciate you too, brother, but wouldn't it be beautiful if we had the trucks and the warehouses and we could take everything we grew and get it to these major cities around us, because all the black people I know like to eat every day.
Yes.
But somehow, the light has not gone off in their brain to make them want to support us. So I'm here to tell you all, when the missed meal cramps hit you, and they're going to hit you.
Yes.
Then they're going to be looking for it.
Oh, yeah. Well, you get a chance, like our page, West Georgia Farmers Cooperative, in peace and blessings to you,
West,
man.
West Georgia Farmers Collective, right?
Cooperative.
Okay, cooperative. Got it.
All right, Brother Craig, thank you so much. We want to get another caller on the line before we run out of time. Caller with the last four numbers, 0621, please give us your name and tell us where you're calling from.
Brother Ross C. I'm Brother Renard's partner.
Yes, brother. Mm-hmm. Greetings, brother.
Peace, brother.
Peace.
Yes.
I wasn't gonna say anything, but I pushed it so that if something came up and I wanted to interject.
Yes.
But right now I'm fine listening and it's positive.
Good word, brother. Good word. And so thank you, Brother Rossi. And family, take note of you know, Brother Eric, Brother Rossi. These are folks that are participating in working the land like Brother Renard is talking about. It's a very serious matter. And when Brother Eric talked about the cooperative, and Renard is very receptive to it, if the people would participate. So we've got to participate in our liberation. And, you know, when Eric talked about the farmers, yes.
That's correct. I can guarantee you that between myself and my wife and Brother Rossi, we could grow food to feed 25 families very easily. And it would be like, you know, a locally righteous food company. And we would love to do that and find, you know, some serious Afrocentric folks who would like to have food security. Not just talk about
it,
but actually make it happen.
Yes.
So along those lines, you know, I'm writing a book And I'm spending a lot more time on it now. And throughout the winter, I'll be writing more. But it's a primer for the African American Agrarian Association for Sustainability, and it's really going to be a blueprint of how to take a raw piece of land and things to consider about building energy efficient houses, with the idea that the house will take care of you. Okay, because most of the time we're having these bills to run our houses for energy. The house needs to provide its own energy with an attached greenhouse that you can grow food in. So regardless of whatever you want to do in your outside life, we need to rethink how we think about houses. Houses should take care of your basic needs. And then you go from there. Okay. But we stand ready to do the work.
Okay. And we need to be on for, you know, 2 or 3 hours because there's so much more to brought forth. Tell us, you mentioned, you know, about growing vegetables. You do animals, any type of animals? And say something very quickly about that.
Yes. We raise meat goats. And in the past, we've raised guineas and chickens, but right now we're focusing on meat goats and squabs because I'm a value-added producer and I have to do things that we can do with the limited labor we have, and those projects work well. So we do have that, okay. And I have a food truck, and we're here. We're Vanguard Ranch, Natural Gourmet on the website, on the internet.
Okay. And when you say Natural Gourmet, tell me what kind of things you have when you do events on your food truck.
Well, you know, we like to raise our lettuce, tomato, and cucumbers. In particular, those things go really well. We do a mean goat burger, curry goat kebabs. We also do vegetarian and gluten-free dishes. I've got seeds for some African eggplants. Peppers, we're going to be growing them. We try to do some things that have, we definitely do things that have a cultural connection. So we've got these African eggplants from, that came from Ghana. I got the seeds from a friend who bought them back. And they were very delicious when we trialed them out. So we're going to do them again this year coming. And habanero peppers and squash and okra and eggplants.
Okay.
Sweet potatoes.
Okay.
The usuals.
Yes. Good.
And lots of fresh basil. And.
Okay. Okay. Well, family, this is some powerful information tonight. We've got to, as a group, we've got to do better. And we've got to band together and pool our resources. And that's, you know, what Uplifting Us is about us coming together and pooling our resources intellectually and financially. And we've got to break away from, so it's like tonight we're talking about food and livelihood. And the farmers are vital and important, very important for our survival, because like Brother Renard said, that food is number one, and if you get them hunger pains, you'll wish that you were in a position where you were growing some of your own or you were part of an intentional community. And so with that in mind, we need to transition back to the land and back to supporting the farmers like Brother Renard and Brother Eric and Rossi. And we also need to transition away from this capitalistic model back to our original cooperative model, which is ancient. And
that's right.
That puts us in a position where we will be like Uplifting Us has in place a very well laid out model that would allow us to pool our resources and build large scale businesses that we own and control as a group.
Definitely.
And we employ our people with no bosses, because it's operated by the group, no bosses and no racism. And we receive fair wages, profit sharing, and even member worker bonuses for members that are employed in our various businesses. And it would also position us where we will be able to leave businesses and legacies for generations into our future. And as Brother Renard said a little earlier, if you're growing in your backyard food, small plots of food, you can't leave that as a business to anyone. But when you got some land, and you got the business, yes, that's what, you can do that. And so we urge anybody that's not already a member of Us Lifting Us to go to the webpage, www.usliftingus.com, www.usliftingus.com, and take a real good look at Us Lifting Us. Go through, look at the plan, take notes, ask questions, and apply for membership. And you have to apply. It's not automatic. And if you apply, and once you are accepted, your membership application is accepted, along with you sending in $50, which is the annual membership amount, you would be accepted as a member of Us Lifting Us, and it also gives you voting rights for all of the any issues and new items that and new businesses. You would have voting rights, full voting rights as a member, and your annual dues are up to date. And we encourage you, we must do this collective, cooperative thing. Eric talked about it. Brother Renard is very aware of it. And I can testify that when it comes to Brother Renard and Brother Rossi, that I know both of them. And I have been in participating several years ago in a CSA with Brother Renard. And the food that he was bringing to the people was substantial for the money, and the food was so good in quality that every fall I started having rations, because I said, oh, no, now I'm going to have to start going back to the stores, and it's not the same group of people. The quality of the food wouldn't be the same. It wouldn't even taste as good. I wanted to continue to get the food that Brother Renard and his family was growing for all of the year. But I was among a few, not enough people, that continuously invested in that CSA. But it's something we can do. It's been done, and we must do it. And we must support, as Brother Renard said, our farmers, because if they're not there and all that they do to grow the food and work the land and know the science of the land, and I don't know if Brother Renard got into it too much, but he could really delve down into the science of the land. And Matt, to mention it, on the Us Lifting Us Facebook page, there's a short video on there, and Brother Renard mentions, it's on there today, it's on there right now, that he mentions there's a science about growing food and working the land, and he's very knowledgeable about that science, and we must get back in the groove of this cooperative, collective work and responsibility, because there's a serious war being waged on our people. And if we don't pull together, we are in very bad trouble. And what's going in the wind ain't good. And like you talked about, when the hunger pains come, you'd wish that you had got in the groove and supported farmers like Brother Renard, Brother Eric. And we can do that, and we should do that.
Yes,
and
we can.
And also, what do you say?
I said, yes, we can.
Yes, yes. And so we will definitely look forward to having Brother Renard back again, because there's so much more that he can add to the conversation. And just like he talked about your house and how you, I forget his exact language, but how you can structure your house to where it really has benefits, and it helps to sustain you and minimize the cost of operating your house, including heating and air conditioning. And so we don't have any other callers. And Brother Renard, if you want to, you give us some closing words, because I know you got so many more, but give us some closing words as we end the last minute.
I think we need to really make a concerted effort to return to the land. You know, I say revive the man, rebuild the family. Part of the problems that we have in the African-American community is that, you know, the men have lost their way. They're no longer the producers, and we need to we need to do that, to strengthen what we do. And I also have to say that I couldn't do this without the help of my wife, Jeanette, who works as hard as I do to make this place work. This is a way to bring families back together. It's a way to rebuild our communities. And it's a way to change this hopeless feeling that many of our youth find themselves trapped in, because you see, they're having to trade their life and their time for dollars. And if you look at every dollar bill in the country, it's got faces of old white men on it. So subconsciously, we're deifying the colonizers.
Yes, we do.
Because they provide all of the goods and services for us. Go to the land, grow your own food, build your house, get off the grid, don't be a slave. Farming is liberation. That's it.
Good word. Good word, brother. Family, go to the Facebook page and look at Brother Aziz, Brother Renard's short video, and network with him, network with Eric, network with our farmers, and give them the proper support, and realize that this food is a very, very serious matter. And we are signing off for the night. We will be back next Thursday, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, with another topic of our continuing education and helping people to become aware that we must get back into doing the cooperating and collective and cooperative economics in our relations, our business, farming, building businesses, on and on. See you next week.
Thank you. Thank you for this opportunity to share. Peace and love.
Thank you always.